KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. For over a dozen years, salmon have been listed as a threatened and endangered species, and in the hour coming up, we'll focus on what kinds of actions are being taken to preserve salmon sustainability and what measures are being pushed and advocated to ensure spawning, better habitats, and less imperilment. Forum is next with your calls and emails after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's forum. Penguins may brave 60 miles of blizzard and ice to mate, as seen in the French-made documentary The March of the Penguins, but salmon, often moving through urban arteries, can wind up on a 1,200-mile trek to spawn. Except that spawning is increasingly difficult for salmon, particularly for those moving within an urban environment. For over a dozen years, salmon have been listed on threatened and endangered species lists, and we're going to look in this hour at the survival and sustainability of salmon. First, an announcement just yesterday, the Fish and Game stated that in really fairly dramatic terms, the recreational salmon season is going to open as scheduled on the 1st of April, and that applies only to state waters, we ought to add. That's 3 miles of the coast between Point Arena and Point Sur. Let me tell you who is joining us for this hour. We want to welcome first Kristen Kittleson, who is fishery resource planner for the County of Santa Cruz and joins us from Santa Cruz. Welcome.
Thank you.
Glad to have you. Also glad to have Jeff Miller, who is director of the Alameda Creek Alliance. He joins us from Davis this morning. Welcome.
Hi.
Hi to you. And David Hogan is here with us. He's director of the Urban Wildlands Program with the Center for Biological Diversity, and he's in Santa Cruz. Morning, David Hogan.
Morning.
Let me begin with you, David Hogan. How endangered now are salmon in the general sense?
Salmon and steelhead are very endangered, and particularly so in the Bay Area. Sometimes people don't realize it, but there are, as of today, there are salmon and steelhead that are attempting to swim through urban creek channels in the Bay Area to reach their historic spawning habitat in the foothills around San Francisco, Oakland, Berkeley, Fremont, and other areas.
And are unable to sort of go that route because of the pollution that's involved, the storm runoff? What's actually interfering, maybe?
There are so many things that that seem to scheme against salmon and steelhead returning to their historic habitat. You have polluted water. You have channelized stream channels are lined with concrete and riprap. You have dams. You have roads that cross those stream channels. Many barriers to the species returning.
Well, the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation has had the same water diversion policy since about 2002, even though I think there's an Earth Justice won a federal appellate court ruling invalidating that policy. What at this point, really needs to be done to, get behind some of these barriers that are there, particularly some of the dams? I mean, they seem it seems like there's just a proliferation of obstacles to have to deal with.
Yeah, the amazing thing is that, there are things that can be done. These fish are remarkably resilient. The fact that they still are still out there today is a testament to their resiliency and ability to recover if we just give them a chance. These fish are today swimming up streams like Alameda Creek. Jeff can talk more about that. This horrible industrial stream channel through Fremont and Niles in the South Bay. And all we need to do are take out some barriers, a few key barriers, build a few fish ladders, and these fish can return to their original spawning habitat.
Talk about fish ladders some more. It keeps coming up as a necessity for saving and sustaining salmon.
I think that Jeff Miller may be able to talk a little bit more about that, especially for the Bay Area.
Jeff?
Yeah, well, I would just add, some of the biggest impacts that have happened to West Coast salmon and steelhead are habitat destruction and alteration. And, of course, the biggest impacts is from building dams. Also water diversions, and of course the usual suspects for endangered species, urban development, logging, grazing, gravel mining, pesticides, et cetera, on down the list. But certainly for Alameda Creek and for some of the more urbanized streams, one of the big problems is in-stream barriers, whether they be dams or culverts or, you know, grade control structures that physically present or prevent ocean-run fish from getting back into the streams where they can spawn. And that's something we're working on at Alameda Creek. We've actually got literally a dozen local, state, and federal agencies pursuing fish passage projects, either removing abandoned dams or constructing fish ladders past barriers that are currently blocking fish, and basically enabling fish to get up to areas where there's suitable spawning and rearing habitat higher up in the hills.
How does that process take place?
Well, it's a long process. I mean, our group formed in 1997 after steelhead trout in the Central California coast, which includes Bay Area streams, were listed as threatened under the Endangered Species Act. And, you know, we're one of just literally thousands of watershed groups in California that are trying to do something locally to restore an endangered species. And, you know, we've just been, hammering away on the water agencies and the flood control districts and just trying to get them to, make restoring native fish a priority, one of the priorities of their agencies. And, a lot of public organizing, a lot of media attention. We also have dramatized the problem in Alameda Creek with getting out there and doing fish rescues. We actually go in and net stranded fish below these dams and physically move them above the dams to better habitat.
So. Isn't the main issue in these urban streams and creeks and rivers dewatering?
Yeah, that's actually the probably for Alameda Creek, one of the things we're working on, and for you know, all the streams in California, how much water is available, how much fresh water and water temperature is really critical for survival of steelhead and salmon. And, you know, most of our urban streams and even a lot of our more remote streams are diverted for agriculture or urban drinking water. And often, in Alameda Creek, we have no minimum flows below these dams for fish. And in a lot of streams, the flows that are left in the river for fish are simply inadequate to sustain them.
With these closures of fishing, now it looks like it's going to be okay for recreational, but not for commercial. I'm just wondering what your take is, particularly when you think about what's going on up in the Klamath River, for example, but certainly all over. Zeke Grader, for example, who's executive director of the Pacific Coast Federation of Fishermen's Association, said that when you're trying to essentially fix the problem by putting fish in the water and shutting down the fishing, it's sort of like throwing virgins to a volcano. In other words, it's not the commercial fishing problem that's the problem.
Well, I would tend to agree, and I'd have to say, you know, we've been working with a lot of the commercial fishing groups and fly fishing groups, and, fishermen, even especially commercial fishermen, are enthusiastic advocates of habitat restoration for salmon and steelhead because that's part of their livelihood. And you gave the example of the Klamath River, which we had the big fish kill a few years back because of not leaving adequate water in the stream. And certainly the commercial fishermen are being penalized for habitat destruction that's happening in the stream. And I suspect there's an agenda here to actually drive to destroy the commercial fishing industry, because these people are essentially a built-in constituency advocating for salmon and steelhead, and I think this administration is very hostile to that kind of advocacy.
Based on your perception of the hostility, is based on what?
Well, the Bush administration has the worst record of any administration on endangered species. The administration has not voluntarily listed a single endangered species. Everything's been as a result of a lawsuit or a settlement of a lawsuit. And just given, the situation on the Klamath, where the administration was warned of what was going to happen and went ahead and diverted, allowed water to be diverted to agriculture and knew it would drive the salmon runs near extinction and went ahead and did it. I just think there's so many examples of the Bush administration, choosing industry over endangered species or sustainable jobs, in this case for the salmon industry.
Again, Jeff Miller directs the Alameda Creek Alliance. He's with us from Davis, and Kristen Kittleson is fishery resource planner for the County of Santa Cruz, and she's with us from Santa Cruz. There's been a lot of watershed assessments completed over the last few years. What's the picture you get from that with respect to salmon, Kristen?
Well, we have mostly steelhead down here in Santa Cruz County, and then we also have the most southern distribution of coho salmon, which are in some of our northern creeks and are very endangered. And it's sort of what Jeff Miller said. It's kind of the whole potpourri of impacts, urbanization, passage barriers, water diversion, you know, habitat modification. But what's neat in Santa Cruz is that there's been a lot of really strong partnerships that have developed over the last 5 years. And it's been really neat. The County of Santa Cruz works very closely with the Santa Cruz County Resource Conservation District. We have a lot of partners in the agencies, the Coastal Conservancy, Fish and Game, NOAA Fisheries. And there's just been this great synergistic effect of working together in partnership. So there's been a lot happening to try to push, go from watershed assessments into implementation and really get projects done on the ground.
A lot of catching up to do, though, especially in municipalities. I mean, the urban water projects were built without much awareness of what we're talking about here.
That's right, and we're a little bit unique in Santa Cruz County because we don't have the big dam that blocks 50% of the steelhead or salmon habitat, which is nice. I'm glad we don't have that. And also, all of our water that we use within Santa Cruz County comes from within the county, and that's pretty unusual in California. So it kind of creates a little bit more of a community feeling that, you know, we need to solve our water problems locally because it's our own local problem, which is great.
When you talk about stream remediation, you're talking about need for more funding, and you're also talking about need for more people.
That's right. I mean, you know, we could always use more money, and that's partly, you know, not just for the County of Santa Cruz, but for all of our partners. Some of the funding that's been coming in for salmonid restoration is threatened right now. And so all this energy that's been built up through these watershed assessments and trying to move to implementation, it's going to come to a halt if there's not funding that continues. Fortunately, there's a couple positive things. I wanted to mention there's Senate Bill 1125 that just passed in the Natural Resources and Water Committee Tuesday, I think. And that is a Senate bill to appropriate tideland oil revenues as a permanent funding source for fishery restoration program. And the state funding is really critical because it's also used as a match to get federal funding. And so that would be a great thing.
So you've got, you know, these problems with crossings and culverts and highways, but how do those compare, let's say, to the problems of say high water temperature and low flows, or the disease that's killing these juvenile fish, particularly from pollutants and pesticides?
Well, I think passage is important. It means that the fish can get in and out more easily. They don't get hung up at some of these. In Santa Cruz County, we have a lot of partial barriers. They're not absolute barriers like a dam, but they're partial barriers. So they delay the fish getting in or out. And there's also been a really strong message from both NOAA Fisheries, who's, you know, the agency responsible for the endangered listing, and the California Department of Fish and Game, that they want to work on passage now. And they want to work on passage first. And so partly it's like, well, if they want to work on passage, you have to kind of get on the boat and go. And that's where the funding is right now, is to do passage. And then what I see is that in the future, once we do a number of these passage projects, and can kind of say, okay, well, we took care of, you know, the most important passage barriers in Santa Cruz County, then we'll move on and start moving into some of the other impacts. And for Santa Cruz County, one of the big impacts is sedimentation and then also lack of water.
But in the urban areas, again, David Hogan, it's this natural runoff pattern being dramatically altered, and it makes the buffers less effective. I'm wondering, since we talked about the proposed Pombo bill that would change endangered species and have taken that on, there was a lot of concern about EPA enforcement and the EPA needing to implement what Fish and Wildlife Service recommends. We've got 55 pesticides out there. There's a lawsuit, in fact, on that. How much are we really talking about the endangerment, which I started talking to you about from the get-go, being the result of pollutants and pesticides?
Pollution is going to be a major issue when, you know, anytime you have, you know, a living organism in water that's polluted, and of course that's going to impact salmon and steelhead. It's just one of the, you know, these cumulative effects. You have the pollution, you have the barriers, you have the water diversions, the logging, the urban development. All of these things add up to, you know, a big blow to these species that are just trying to get back to their habitat.
What can we do with the runoff, though? I mean, you know, you separate it from the creeks. What are you suggesting?
California has passed a number of laws, and slowly but surely it seems that these are being adopted by the local cities and stuff that require holding urban runoff on development sites, you know, filtering it before it goes back to streams. But the most important thing are reducing water use to begin with. The less water that's used on a new development site, you know, for lawns or watering of vegetation, the less water that's going to run off, you know, from sprinklers in the middle of the night down the drain, moving pollution from the streets into the urban creeks.
Let me go, David Hogan, to you again. Restoring the creeks, you've got this overrun of stormwater with all these pollutants and pesticides and oil, and I mean, any way you look at it, it's going to be costly.
Yeah, all of these things are going to be expensive, and that's why it's particularly important that water agencies and the people that pay water bills need to recognize that you know, protection of wildlife in these streams is a cost of us being able to use these streams for water. And the good news is that there are effective ways to balance getting water to people and protecting these endangered wildlife. So many times, you know, people kind of, you know, the water agencies will pit, you know, the species against people, and that's just not the case. It might be a little bit more expensive. Water bill may be a little higher, but it's worth the cost. You know, we're talking about protection of whole ecosystems, and if we're protecting these fish, then chances are we're protecting the water quality of this water that's used by people.
Jeff Miller, can I get you in on this now?
Yeah, on the urban stream restoration.
Yeah,
absolutely. Well, you know, we're prepared. We're working with a couple water districts in South San Francisco Bay that are prepared to spend some money on urban steelhead restoration. And again, it's you know, we're not going to have a big fish run like, you know, the Columbia River or the Klamath or something like that. But I think it is important to restore these urban creeks and actually, you know, have people realize that these creeks are you know, habitat, but also, like Dave said, I think it makes people realize, hey, if we have steelhead in our creek and they're surviving, we're doing something right for water quality, and that means you know, our water, our drinking water is in good shape, and it also just connects people to where they live. And you know, it's amazing that in the Bay Area we still have these runs of salmon and steelhead, and I think people value having restored creeks and having that wildlife.
Well, again, it shows how resilient they are, but they need protection. And to recover the populations, I'm talking about statewide now, you're going to have these large dams come down, aren't you?
Well, absolutely. I mean, a good example is the Central Valley. Estimates are that up to 90% of original salmon and steelhead spawning habitat in the Central Valley is now blocked by dams. So what we've done with dams is we've cut off, in some cases, for some species, some of the best habitat, and a lot of our salmon and steelhead populations are, you know, we're forced them to survive in suboptimal habitat that's been degraded below the dams. So certainly, to restore some of these populations, we're going to have to make some choices about taking some dams out and prioritizing streams where we can actually restore healthy populations. And you know, a few dams are going to have to go. The good news is some of these dams are abandoned, failing, or filling in with sediment anyhow, and are close to the end of their useful life. So it's, you know, the trade-offs are pretty minimal. But certainly in some streams, you know, we're going to have to make a decision on streams that are going to support healthy populations, so that when we do have the next extended drought, we don't lose our migratory fish populations altogether.
So can you give us a success story? Maybe inspiring type of success story?
We're working on making Alameda Creek a success story in the South Bay. We, like I said, we've got a dozen agencies working on fish passage projects. We're in negotiations with the city of San Francisco, which has two major dams for drinking water for San Francisco, trying to get minimum flows in the stream. And I think you know, within the next five to 10 years, we're going to start seeing a restored steelhead population, and hopefully some other migratory fish species in Alameda Creek.
Another cause for hope is in Southern California, Mtilaha Dam on the Ventura River. It's a dam that's been completely silted in, and there's a major effort by activists there, by the County of Ventura, and by the Army Corps of Engineers and Bureau of Reclamation to plan for the removal of that dam.
And Kristen Kittleson, you had remarked earlier there are a lot of partnerships taking place. You want to highlight something that really stands out as far as success story?
Well, we're actually just going into implementation, so there's a couple projects that are going to be happening this summer where we're going to be taking out some the Resource Conservation District is going to be taking out two low water crossings, fords, and replacing them with bridges for private property owners. And then for the county, we're going to be doing three retrofit projects on culverts. We're going to be doing a neat project where we take a box culvert and cut out the bottom of it and put in a slot so that steelhead can migrate past it easier. And then we're going to be installing a fish ladder and another retrofit where we put in weirs and other things to help the fish get through the culvert. So that's pretty exciting. This summer is going to be a big summer because some of these projects are going to finally be implemented.
We're talking, of course, about salmon and even some talk about having a sustainable label as far as the salmon that you buy and eat. But the concern about salmon as an endangered species and the concern about preserving salmon and having them spawn through the arteries of urban world that they move in, I'm wondering, is it different, Kristen, maybe I'll address this to you, is it different here in terms of what we're facing on the West Coast than, say, on the East Coast or in the South with salmon?
Actually, it's interesting. I just went to a conference, the Salmonid Restoration Federation, and they had two speakers, one a woman from Maine who was talking about the preservation of Atlantic salmon, and then also another speaker who had researched salmon conservation in Europe. And it was interesting, and I need to go back and read that book, but there's probably a lot of lessons to learn about how in history people have tried to preserve salmon and haven't been very successful. So there's some interesting lessons because this one guy was talking about, you know, a law in the 1500s that was proclaimed that no one shall obstruct the movement of salmon in England. And, you know, people still put up dams. And it's just funny to see that we're facing the same issue here on the West Coast. So hopefully we'll be more successful on the West Coast.
Well, up in the Klamath, along that 700 miles of the Pacific Coast, there's a possibility of a total closure for the salmon season. And the National Marine Fisheries Service says that a total ban on ocean Chinook fishing is the only way to protect the few remaining Klamath fish. I think, David Hogan, you would not agree.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the Bush administration wants to divert attention from its destruction of habitat in the Klamath watershed and its favorable or its special treatment of agribusiness in that watershed, divert attention by focusing on fishing. You know, that's a red herring. The issue isn't going to be fishing there. You know, fishing may cause impacts, and that may need to be regulated. But the primary harm that's being caused there to salmon and steelhead is habitat destruction and water diversion.
From agricultural diversions, which
that's
are
right.
Really behind the die-offs. Yeah. I'm going to open up the phone lines and invite those of you listening to join us with any questions or comments you might have as we continue to discuss salmon populations and the movement of wild fish stocks through California's urban creeks and streams. You can join us now, toll-free, at 866-733-6786. Lines are open and available to you, and we welcome your involvement in the program. It's live and interactive. If you have questions or comments, again, you can join us now, whether you're listening to us on radio, Internet, or Sirius satellite. Our toll-free number available to you is 866-733-6786, or, of course, you can join us by email, and emails are welcome. Any questions or comments you want to email us, the email address is forum, F-O-R-U-M, at kqed.org. Talking with David Hogan, director of the Urban Wildlands Program with the Center for Biological Diversity. He's with us from Santa Cruz. With Jeff Miller, director of the Alameda Creek Alliance, with us from Davis. And Kristen Kittleson, with a fishery, who is fishery resource planner for the county of Santa Cruz and is with us from Santa Cruz. And again, join the program. It's toll-free, 866-733-6786. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're discussing salmon populations and the movement of wild fish stocks through California's urban creeks and streams with David Hogan of the Center for Biological Diversity, Kristen Kittleson of the Fishery Resource County of Santa Cruz, and Jeff Miller of the Alameda Creek Alliance. And let's go right to your phone calls, and we'll begin with Bob from Oakland. Good morning.
Hi. Thanks, Michael. I'm just calling because I've heard a lot about these restoration efforts around the bay, but I've always been confused about what I could actually do to try and help, and I'm wondering if the callers, maybe Jeff or Dave or some of these guys who are doing work on the ground can tell us where we can go on the web or get involved with these groups that are working on salmon restoration so we can, you know, get in the streams and help you guys out.
Well, you've come to the right place. Jeff, you're right in the water. You want to go first?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we have volunteers to help us do fish rescue, monitor fish populations, keep an eye on stream conditions, do creek cleanups, et cetera. And the Alameda Creek Alliance website is www.alamedacreek.org. And then a really good resource for the Bay Area is the Oakland Museum has a list of all the watershed groups in the Bay Area by region and by watershed. So if you go to museumca.org, and I think it's /creeks, but just look for the creeks, they will have a watershed finder, and you can find your local creek or find a regional creek that you want to get involved in, and it'll have contact info for all the creek groups.
I was just informed by Kevin that it is /creeks. Anything to add to that, David Hogan?
Yeah, you know, it's just a plug to get out there, because I actually just joined Jeff Miller last weekend to do some fish rescue on Alameda Creek, and I've been working on steelhead conservation for years, and this, I think, was the first time I had seen a live steelhead up close, and it's just this amazing experience. You're in this, you know, like I mentioned earlier, this kind of awful industrial stream. You're kind of uncertain about the water quality, but yeah, here's this fish that embodies the spirit of the wild, and you're basically saving them from a certain doom at the base of these dams, moving them upstream. And you know, the joy to see in people's faces, there's always people gathered on the banks of the creek because they're just fascinated by this effort to save these fish, and it's just a remarkable experience. So get out there and do something like that. You'll never forget it.
Kristen Kittleson, want to add?
Yeah, in Santa Cruz County, there's volunteer monitoring programs through the Coastal Watershed Council. And then also the Resource Conservation District has some volunteer programs.
There's certainly enough need on that score. Let me go to more of our callers. And, Ed, join us. You're on the air. Good morning.
Oh, good morning. Thanks, Michael, for taking my call.
Sure.
I was up on Lagunitas Creek in late December after the heavy rains we had had to look for some coho on Lagunitas Creek with some friends of mine. And it was really an amazing experience. We got up to the main creek, and, of course, the heavy rains had, I guess, had washed out a lot of the spawning beds along the main creek. But then we went up into this smaller stream in this gulch and found probably 6 or 7 pairs of coho spawning in this very, very small stream. And it was kind of a surreal experience. I mean, these fish are enormous. And relative to the size of the stream, it was really amazing. I just wanted to sort of point out the intrinsic value of these creatures and just how wonderful it is to have creatures like this so close to an urban area.
Appreciate your doing that, Ed, and thank you for your call. And we'll go to more of your calls, and we'll go next to Juliet. Morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to bring up the issue again of water quantity and flow, since it's such a major part of keeping salmon in our streams. But Kristen mentioned that agencies and funding sources are really focused on barrier removal. And in my experience working on restoration for over 3 years, I've found that most restoration projects don't deal with water quantity. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering, what are some of the institutional and legal barriers to dealing with flow, and how could they be overcome? How can we start talking about this really central issue, which is also incredibly politically contentious?
Yeah, Kristen, you want to take that?
Yeah, there's a couple things. I mean, there's one that, I mean, there's a lot of people that live in these watersheds, and we all use the water, and so we're not really going to be looking at moving people out. And so it's trying to figure out how to maximize the water that we have. And in Santa Cruz, there's sort of two different venues that are happening. One is really looking at some creative ideas. There's ideas of taking excess stream flow in the wintertime and actually putting it into an abandoned quarry and trying to increase groundwater recharge. I'm looking at things called conjunctive use, where you try to increase groundwater recharge and alternate between stream diversions and groundwater use. There's been some neat research recently where, you know, they found out that the recharge for the Soquel Water District is actually in this other watershed, and so they're looking at doing some projects in that other watershed. And then there's also desalination, and that's one of the things that's being looked at in Santa Cruz County is, you know, using seawater. And it's energy intensive, and there's some impacts, but it's also really provides a safety buffer for droughts to not have to use the stream water.
Well, Juliet also raised the question about political impediments.
Yeah, in Santa Cruz, we're really trying to, again, kind of work with the water districts. And you know, I find that the water districts here are looking at trying to do some creative solutions. Again, as one of the other speakers said, trying to not have it be an us against them, because we all live here, we use the water, and so trying to help the water districts figure out how to, you know, how to solve the problems creatively.
Let me thank Juliet for her call. And by the way, if you want to join us, our toll-free number again is 866-733-6786, or you can join us by email, and our email address here is forum@kqed.org. And let me look at some of these emails. Steve writes, listening to today's show, I wanted to bring your attention to a new documentary about the Klamath salmon problems called Battle for the Klamath. It investigates the problem starting in 2001 and continues through today, interviewing all the major players involved in the dispute, including tribal members, government officials, farmers, and the whistleblower, Mike Kelly. You can see a trailer for the film at www.veriscope.com, V-E-R-I-scope.com. Here's a listener. John, this is my take. If our society is trying to protect whole ecosystems, we need to teach that exact message across the board, clearly and repeatedly. Education is key to actually accomplishing restoration of natural systems. Environmentalists are losing the battle to dishonest political attacks and spin global warming doesn't exist, and by their own tendency to spend more time talking about the negatives than educating about the big picture. If people understand how nature works and what's at stake, the politicians will be forced to follow. And Doug says, Michael and guests, it seems to me there is a big disconnect between what the urban water agencies don't do to protect and restore fisheries versus what the urban water users, the ratepayers, want. I have the impression that many urban water users would gladly pay increased rates for this cause. Accordingly, some very important democratic principles are violated. What can be done to make the urban water agencies more accountable to the democratic wishes or rights of the ratepayers? Some thoughts, maybe, David Hogan?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really important point, and you know, the only thing we can do is just keep plugging away. This is where, you know, Jeff Miller years ago started as, you know, a one-person show there in Alameda Creek, and it's now built to a movement to restore Alameda Creek. Anybody can adopt a watershed near their home or an area that they care about. Begin going to meetings of the water board. Start organizing your friends and neighbors and people to show up at the meetings, to deliver the message that you want policies changed to protect native fish and native ecosystems.
Let me look at a few more of your emails here. This is from Susan giving more information. She says, good morning. Wanted to let you know that the Salmon Protection and Watershed Network, SPAWN, a group that focuses on salmon and watershed restoration in West Marin, manages a listserv on salmon issues. Published on the listserv are current news articles on watershed and salmon issues for the Pacific Northwest. Our subscribers are primarily scientists, environmental writers, and activists. To subscribe, send an email to SPAWN Almon News. That's one word, SPAWN, A-L-M-O-N, news, dash subscribe at lists.riseup.net. Here's Enrique, who says, in Saucel Creek in Oakland, as we speak, under the Leimert Avenue Bridge, the sanitary sewer manhole covers are open and obvious pollution is occurring. I reported it. Let's see what happens. And Jamie writes, I missed part of the show. Can any of the guests give a high-level overview of how the watersheds and salmon steelhead runs are doing up here? I saw some spawning earlier in the year, but have no idea about the size of the runs and the overall health of our watersheds. And maybe get an overall picture from you, Jeff Miller, can we?
I can talk about the Bay Area a little. Obviously, Lagunitas Creek in West Marin is kind of our prize jewel. A tenth of the state's coho salmon population actually runs up Lagunitas Creek and some of the associated tributaries. And, you know, because of state parks and the National Park Service land out there, you've got a lot of protected habitat, and that's really the best, you know, Bay Area run of fish. In the South Bay, the Guadalupe River is starting to have restored runs because, interestingly enough, the Santa Clara Valley Water District a few years back went to the state legislature and actually changed the mission of their agency to include watershed protection, and has put in fish ladders and done a number of restoration projects, and we're actually seeing a Chinook salmon population build back up in the Guadalupe River in the South Bay. San Francisco Creek through Palo Alto has a run of steelhead trout, and then there's some streams, certainly the Napa River or the Petaluma River in the North Bay. But, you know, a lot of urban streams just have either very occasional fish that come up or have very small remnant runs and really need people to get involved and work with the local groups to make, you know, restoring them a reality. But we can get fish back in a lot of these urban streams, at least in wet years.
And just a reminder, because it was announced that yesterday the decision was made to open salmon season, ocean salmon season, from Point Arena to Point Sur, as planned, in state waters. That's 3 miles and less recreationally, and it'll open on April 1st as planned. However, fishing in federal waters beyond the three-mile line will remain closed, and we're going to go to more of your calls here. And we got Sandy Althaus or Sandy Althaus's son here on
here? Well, I think Sandy Althaus's son kind of got a little too bashful to talk on the phone. He's homesick from school today. Xander, he's 8, and he is obsessed with fish. And for his birthday party a couple months ago, we went to try to see the salmon spawn up in Marin, and I guess we just missed them. We were out there in the pouring rain and didn't see anything, so our next job was to try to find the steelhead trout, and we've gone to Portola State Park twice to try to find them. And I was just wondering if you knew approximately when we'd be able to see this. We want to help. We're certainly going to get involved further in this, but he really wants to at least see the steelhead trout up in the mountains up here down near Palo Alto.
Who can provide some help to this young man who's so besotted with salmon and wanting to see them? Anybody on the panel? Yeah?
Oh, I can. I would say definitely get in touch with the local watershed groups.
Jeff Miller.
For example, Spawn in West Marin gives tours, and they have naturalists who know where the spawning areas are. And you know, look up the group in your watershed, and there's people that can take you out. I certainly will take anyone out to Alameda Creek to see steelhead when we have them running. And as far as timing, the coho salmon, typically you're going to see November through January, and steelhead more late December, early January through March in the San Francisco Bay Area.
Well, that's what we've tried, and we keep going up there, but they don't seem to be coming. I mean, do they come late sometimes? I mean, so no one knows specifically. There's not like a website that says, okay, here they come. They're coming through Palo Alto now. Come on up to see them.
Yeah, it's very dependent on flows, and you know, like this year, we're getting a lot of late rain, so we're getting some late fish. But they can be elusive. I would just say keep at it, and I can definitely put you in touch with people in different watersheds who either do tours or can direct you to good viewing locations.
All right,
see if we can make that happen, Sandy. Good luck. I hope Xander finds his way to see the fish.
Oh, thanks.
Appreciate that. That's our colleague, Sandy Althaus. And we go to more of your calls. Rich, good morning.
Yeah, hi. I work with the Natural Heritage Institute, and we're doing a bunch of fish passes projects in Contra Costa County. And I just want to confirm these are really massive collaborative efforts. We're working with Friends of Marsh Creek Watershed and the Contra Costa Flood Control District, American Rivers, to build a fish ladder this summer on Marsh Creek in Brentwood. We're also working with the California State Park Department, the Contra Costa Resource Conservation District, and East Bay Mud to do some fish barrier removals in Mount Diablo Creek Watershed, where there haven't been steelhead for about 15 or 20 years. And I just want to make the comment that, and see how your guests respond to that, salmon and steelhead are really powerful organizing features that can draw a lot of attention to your creeks and then can draw a lot of attention to issues like water quality and flow and habitat, and that we're doing a lot of crummy things to our planet right now, but salmon and steelhead fishery restoration in urban streams is one of the areas where even in the short term, the future is better. The near-term prospects for really improving the condition of these fish are just so heartwarming and just lead to such optimism, and I'd like to hear their comments on that.
All right, let me go first to Kristen Kittleson.
I agree wholeheartedly, and they're really keystones. They're the classic keystone species, and I just think it's great. It makes people much more aware of their watersheds and all the functions that watersheds provide, including, you know, drinking water and everything, and it helps really organize people around that. It's great.
David Hogan, want to add?
Yeah, sometimes it's harder to motivate people to conserve species that are sometimes considered more obscure. The red-legged frog, the snake,
Alameda whip snake.
Yeah, Alameda whip snake. You know, these are species that are just as important and just as endangered. For some reason, people just have a soft spot in their heart for salmon and steelhead, and when we protect those species, we can protect the entire river and stream ecosystems.
David, speaking about protecting them, what about these figures? You know, for example, I was reading that spawning numbers were down 3 years in a row below 35,000. That was a target figure. This up at Klamath. I mean, how valid are those kind of figures?
You know, it just depends on who they're coming from. All you have to do is look.
Well, they're coming from the feds.
Well, if they're coming from the feds during the Bush administration, they're probably not very valid.
I wanted to get that on the record, and I thank you. And let me get some more callers on the record with us. We'll go next to Wanda. Morning.
Oh, good morning. I was born on the Klamath River in a little community called Klamath River, and a tiny community, not Klamath downstream, but a little bitty one up north. And I was curious about the farming that's going on in the northern part of the river. And my question was, and the comment was, that is it mainly agribusiness, or is it mom-and-pop farming, or is it a mixture? And what can we do to make it a win-win situation so that possibly, are there things that they could be doing that they're not doing that could change agribusiness-type standards, use of pesticides? Is there a win-win situation here?
For, who's they, Wanda? You mean
the farmers. That
agriculture, yeah.
The river.
Yeah. Jeff Miller?
I might let Dave handle that, but I certainly I would throw in my two cents would be, you know, water is becoming increasingly scarce and is going to be, you know, obviously water battles have gone on for a long time in California and are going to continue, but we can be more intelligent about what we use our water for and what kind of crops we farm. And certainly this state has a history of growing high water intensive crops in areas that literally were desert. And I think you know, there needs to be some rescheduling of priorities for what crops we grow and what we use large volumes of water for.
Apropos of that, just so listeners know, on Wednesday we're planning a program on the World Water Forum, which is going to be taking place in Mexico City. And it's a precious resource. A lot of people want to privatize it, and we'll get into all that more on Wednesday. Let me thank the caller, and go to more of your calls in just a moment, but first let me go to some of your emails. Barbara says, Michael, please let your listeners know that a report on wildlife diversity in California, including the state of the salmon and the watersheds, and recommendations for conserving and restoring them can be found on the web at www.dfg.ca.gov/habitats/WDP. And Sam says, if we're so short on water for salmon creeks in these heavy mountain snow years, what's going to happen in a light snow year? There's a thought.
Well, it's an important point.
Yeah.
Because, you know, in California, unfortunately, it's almost like every last drop of water is claimed by some water agency or agribusiness. Oftentimes, the only water that's in any particular stretch of stream, especially like Sierra foothill streams, is water that's there because it's being delivered to a downstream user. So that water may not be there at the right time for wildlife. It may only be there at times when an upstream dam has been opened to let the water out to flow to a downstream user. And that's why it's so important to establish in-stream flow rights for wildlife and for streamside vegetation like riparian vegetation to protect wildlife and species that use those rivers and to balance that conservation with downstream water use.
A lot more of you are emailing about things that are going on, and for example, here's Darcy who says, I work with FishNet 4C, which is a coalition of coastal counties from Monterey north to Mendocino. Counties are working to improve the salmon habitat and populations by implementing on-the-ground projects like Santa Cruz County. They're also implementing roads maintenance practices that protect water quality and stream habitat, revising land use policies that affect salmon, such as development setback from creeks, and streamlining the county permitting process to make it simpler for restoration projects to be implemented. The supervisors and staff of the FishNet counties deserve recognition for the great work they're doing to protect the salmon fisheries. And in the spirit of that great work and acknowledgement, Jeff writes, I'm grateful for the efforts of professionals who are trying to restore flow and habitat. Please ask them to talk about what individuals can do. We've actually done that, and which will have the greatest impact. If we want to do one or two effective things, and he suggests some, joining environmental lobbying organizations like the Sierra Club, supporting legislative organizations like the League of Conservation Voters, changing the landscaping in our own yards, lobbying local agencies directly, or taking shorter showers. Anybody want to prioritize? Yeah, Kristen Kittleson?
Yeah, that sounds great. I mean, using less water is one of the most important things we can do. If you're a streamside property owner, there are a lot of small things people can do, just, you know, not dumping debris in the creek, you know, urban users that we've talked about, you know, if they don't dump harmful things down the storm drains. There are a lot of things that people can do.
And here's a listener named Mondi who says, thanks for this program. CalFish.org has lots of good information on the magnitude of the problem. They're not counting the over 200,000 Caltrans culverts. Yes. Senate Bill 857, Sheila Kuehl, now requires Caltrans to build and retrofit road crossing to be fish-friendly. That's important to know. And here's Michael from Mountain Point Ray Station, who says MMWD has a technical advisory committee. It's Marin Municipal Water District, with a very broad representation range working on fisheries, Devil's Gulch being an example, as does the Tomales Bay Watershed Council, of which MMWD is a member. We're seeing some progress in our efforts, and I say good for you. One other email here from Mike, who says, hello, Michael and guests. Would one of the guests take up the use of hatchery stock used to supplement wild populations of steelhead and their effect on wild populations and the effects of hatchery populations on the status of steelhead on their endangered species listing? David Hogan?
Sure. Very, very harmful practice. There is a way for fish to be reared that can be used to supplement native populations, but hatcheries are not the way to go. The fish reared in hatcheries take on different genetics and characteristics that can actually harm the native fish when they're released into streams, especially if they interbreed. So hatcheries are actually more of a threat to wild steelhead and salmon than they are a help.
And I was just going to say, Sandy Althaus's young, you want to see the salmon spawning. Joe, one of our listeners, says, for numbers, there is a great salmon steelhead viewing at the fish ladder on the Feather River in Oroville. I'm sorry, Kristen Kittleson? Yeah.
I just want to add that locally we have a conservation hatchery, the Monterey Bay Salmon and Trout Project, and it's a really different kind of hatchery that's really been instrumental in protecting coho salmon here in San Mateo and Santa Cruz County. So if anyone hears about the Monterey Bay Salmon and Trout Project, they're definitely a different animal than the big hatcheries.
And Gary is a commercial fisherman. He joins us this morning. Hi, Gary.
Hi, how are you doing?
Glad to have you. Good morning.
I wanted to thank everybody that's doing education and habitat restoration. I think the panel has really hit on all the major points that are necessary. But I wanted to zoom out and look at some of the bigger numbers. You know, this is about $200 million that we're talking about in terms of commercial fishing for salmon alone. Keeping that in our local communities is very important. People that want to get involved should turn out to the Pacific Fishery Management Council meeting. It's open for public comment on March 28th in Santa Rosa. And they'll be discussing, you know, these options, which are still options on the table, that they haven't settled on anything as of yet.
Well, Gary, I thank you for that call. In fact, I'm looking at another email here, dovetails in a way, from a steelhead fly fisher who says, what we can all do as consumers to help restore salmon is to demand wild, local-caught salmon in our markets and restaurants and on our plates, because wild salmon require rivers and clean, cold water flowing in rivers and creeks. No habitat equals no wild salmon. Here's Wendy from the Watershed Project, who says at the Watershed Project, our mission is to educate and inspire communities to protect their local watersheds. We offer a range of programs to support healthy watersheds, including workshops for educators and the public, support for creek and watershed groups, and a wetlands restoration project. People can call or email us to help find their local watershed group and to find classes that can help them learn to make better choices in their own home and backyard. Our website is www.thewatershedproject.org. And one more email. This is from Gene. Hi, Michael. Love your show. Thank you, Gene. I just turned into the discussion, so maybe I missed this topic, but I'm interested in hearing about what your guests can say about climate change and the salmon runs. I hear that runs are earlier because of higher temperature and earlier stream flows. Does this cause major problems with salmon health and or their ability to find food and habitat? And are there major efforts by fish protection agencies to deal with climate change through outreach or lobbying policymakers? David Hogan.
Yeah, climate change is a major concern. If people want to understand more about how climate change could impact salmon and steelhead and many other species like polar bears and Caribbean corals, they should check out the Center for Biological Diversity's website. That's www.biologicaldiversity.org. A lot of information on there about the effects of global warming on endangered species, and that's an important issue.
And we'll bring on Rebecca. Good morning.
Good morning.
You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
I went to UC Santa Cruz. I graduated in 2002, and my major was environmental studies. Now I'm teaching English, first-year teacher in Palo Alto, and I'm excited that there are so many ways that adults can get involved in protecting their local watersheds and being advocates for their local watersheds. But I'm wondering how we can get adolescents excited about environmental issues, namely watersheds, and I'd love some suggestions about how to integrate watershed education into the secondary classrooms. And I'll take my comments off the air.
All right, and we thank you for the call, bringing watershed education into her English class or wherever. Jeff Miller, some thoughts?
Yeah, I can talk about that a little. There is a Kids in Creeks program. I'm blanking on who runs it right now. Maybe Save the Bay or one of those organizations. But another really good program is there's a Trout in the Classroom program that some of the local fly fishing groups do, and they have kids actually raise native trout in their classroom. And they also have, educational units on salmon and steelhead. And increasingly, watershed groups are hooking up with teachers to get, educational programs on salmon and steelhead and creek restoration. So, if you do a little bit of searching or if you visit one of the local watershed group websites, there are increasingly programs for kids.
Actually, Jeff, I think we gave it out once before, but it's the watershedproject.org the Watershed Project. And I'm afraid we don't have time for any more calls or emails, but it's been a most informative hour, and I want to thank our guest, Jeff Miller, director of the Alameda Creek Alliance, who was with us this morning from Davis. And thank you, Jeff, for being a part of this program. I want to also thank Kristen Kittleson, fishery resource planner for the County of Santa Cruz, who joined us for Santa Cruz, and I'm grateful that you were on with us this morning. And likewise, David Hogan, director of the Urban Wildlands Program with the Center for Biological Diversity, who is with us this morning from Santa Cruz. Also, appreciate the fact that you were with us, and want to extend our thanks to our listeners, our callers, our emailers, and remind you that another hour of Forum is coming your way. We're going to talk in the next hour about how the cost and accessibility of Internet services may be changing. You may be paying tolls and all kinds of things that you didn't know about, but we'll find out more about that in the hour ahead. In the meantime, I want to thank our producers, Robin Giannatasio-Mal, Hermione G., and Kevin Guillory, our interns, Rebecca Arnold, Jody Avergan, Sarah Dvorkin, Tamara Helfer, and Erica Holt. And we had help throughout the week from Ariana Picari, and our music is by Mike Marshall. Forum's executive producer is Raul Ramirez, and for all of us at KQED, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Claude and Louise Rosenberg Jr. Family Foundation.